the prohibition of swimming much better? Because people say it's normally, oh, because you're scared to make a raft. But you're not going to make a raft when you swim, so what would we normally have to hold five sets for that?
The reason why the Chachamim prohibited rowing a boat, because you may make a raft, so then the Gemara says to swim on a river where it's possible to have a raft, so they even prohibited swimming. To swim in a swimming pool where it's not normal to have a raft, so then the Gemara says they never prohibited swimming in a swimming pool. But there are other concerns. What is Shabbos for? There's no malacha. If you fix a raft, that's a malacha. So they prohibited, strictly speaking, you're not allowed to swim in a river because there are rafts there, so you're not allowed to go swim because you may break the raft and fix it. But what is Shabbos for? Shabbos is to go swimming. Shabbos is to recharge your spiritual batteries. Shabbos is supposed to learn the whole day, supposed to daven the whole day, supposed to do good things. Not supposed to sleep the whole day away. So if a person is mamish, all perspired, and he's annoyed in the summertime, he has no air conditioning, so to dip into a swimming pool, to take a cold shower would be okay. But to spend time swimming, that's not right. That's not what Shabbos is all about. Usually they say you shouldn't go swimming because you may squeeze out the towel. But that's not the real reason. We paskin, you're not allowed to squeeze out the towel, but we paskin, you're not allowed to, it's permissible to use a towel. You're not afraid to never squeeze. You're not allowed to squeeze out your hair also. If a person goes swimming, he may squeeze out his hair. But that's not the reason why it's awesome. He may squeeze out his swimming trunk. That's not the reason why it's awesome. It's not right, because that's not what Shabbos is for. The guy's going to watch television all the time. He said on the television before Shabbos. That's what Shabbos is for, to watch television. He shouldn't watch television all week long either. It's a different story. But that's not Shabbos day. That's not the, it's no malacha on Shabbos. But there's a mitzvah of kibbutz Shabbos and oinik Shabbos. That's a bitla mitzvah of kibbutz and oinik.
So I just wanted to know, what's your perspective on, you know, a yeshiva student going to a secular college after yeshiva? Do you think it's always a terrible idea?
Most of the time it's an extremely terrible idea. There are people who learn 2 and 3 years in Eretz Yisrael in high-level yeshivas, real high-level yeshivas, and they go back to America, they go to Columbia, say after half a year, no more yarmulke, after the end of the year, no Shabbos, and after 2 years, no kashrus. Everything is down the drain. It's a big problem. The pressure in a secular university to go along with everybody else is tremendous, tremendous. So now life is a little better because on a lot of college campuses they give shiurim, but it's still very difficult. And especially now you have so much anti-Israel activity on all the college campuses. So it's very difficult to remain an observant Jew by going to Goyish college. Very difficult.
Is it permissible to walk into a harabite?
One who has a tum hayotza on the migufa is not allowed to go on harabite. So a man who knows he's a balkari, married people are always balkari. A man is a balkari, has to go to mikveh, then he can go into the beginning, a few amas in the harabites. Minator, the whole harabites has the same status till you get to the azora. In the Rabbana, they divided Harbais into 3 units. Mishnah is in the first parak in Caleb. So in the inner unit, the person, even after going to the mikveh, he's a Tomei Mei, so he's not allowed to go. But in the first couple of Amis, it certainly is permissible to go. The person goes to the mikveh, he's allowed to go. The Rabbanu doesn't permit it, because how are they going to get, you're going to go to mikveh, and you're going to get all the conservative and the reform men also to go to mikveh, and the women can't just go to mikveh whenever they want to. A woman has to wait Shivanikim before she can go to mikveh. So it's going to be hefker if they'll allow Orthodox Jews to go to mikveh and go to the harabais. How are they going to tell the conservative and the reform, we don't let you go to harabais? So they prohibit it, no one's allowed to go to harabais. I personally would think that we should, whoever can go to mikveh should go to harabais in order to preserve our claim on the harabais. We're not going. But the Rabbanut said it's going to be a bigger mikshol. I don't think it's right when the Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael paskin Shabbos for America, because they don't know what's going on in America. They don't even understand the whole story. So I don't think it's right for American Rabbanim to paskin Shabbos for issues in Eretz Yisrael. The Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael is in charge. And they're concerned that it'll be a bigger mikshel than otherwise. An acquaintance of mine from New Jersey told me that he went on a tour, he went on a harbayis, he went to the mikveh, all religious. And then the tour guide showed him, you're allowed to go here, not allowed to go there. He followed the instructions. And then there was a girl who was on the tour, and they realized the girl was a religious girl. So at the end of the tour, they asked to the girl, how you allowed to go on the Harbais? What, you went to mikveh? It's a single girl. So the girl says, she's getting married tonight. She's a kala. She went to the mikveh last night. She wanted to go to the Harbais to daven that her shidduch should be good. She should have a mazel in her marriage. She did go to the mikveh. She went to the mikveh last night because her chasana is tonight. Yeah, but the Rabbanut said you shouldn't go because they're afraid it's going to be a bigger michshul than anything.
What's your take on siddhis that are attached to a mesh beged? Are you in kind the mitzvah you wear?
The mesh beged often has bigger holes than it has. Forest Maruba Loime. So I think Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes that he doesn't think that's called a begging. You're not yotzi any tzitzis with that. It's a zechel of tzitzis. It's just a brocha of atol. You're not yotzi any mitzvah.
I'm
Should we actively be building a Beit HaMikdash now in our time, or should we wait for the fall from Shemayim?
There's a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh that reads L'shichtan Sidushu Uvasa Shama, the mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Sifrei from the Tanaim have a comment on the pasuk L'shichtan Sidushu Drosh Al Pi Novi. You can only build the Beis HaMikdash with authorization from a Novi. You know the Gemara mentions this drasha, but the pasukim say would appear the Gemara holds from that din, because the Gemara says after the 70 years of Golas Bavel, the Jews had permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael, and the religious Jews stayed behind. Like today, religious Jews stayed behind in Borough Park and in Flatbush and in Manzi. They like it better in Chutzlars than in Eretz Yisrael. They don't want to come back. So the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Im Chaymahi Nivna Lehatiris Kesim Delasi Natsar Alalu Acharis. Two Pesukim in Shir HaShirim. So the Gemara in the first parak in Yuma says, "Im chaymahi, if after the 7 years of Golas Bavel, when Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdash, he knew that it was going to be destroyed. They already heard from the days of the Meraglim. That's what it says in Yecheskel and in Tehillim. Chumash, it's not so explicit, but in the Novi Yecheskel and Sefer Tehillim it says they were told after the Chet HaMeraglim that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed and they would be sent into Golas. So he knew in advance when he built the first Beis Rishon, he knew it's going to be Chorev, and he said, Beruach HaKodesh, what's going to be? But the second Beis HaMikdash that will be built after the end of the Golas Bavel, will that be the everlasting Beis HaMikdash or not? So he said, Beruach HaKodesh, Im Chaymahi, Im Yalu Kachayma, if everybody will come back, Nivna Leho Tiras Kesed, then the second Beis HaMikdash will be like one made of metal, like a metal structure. Ein HaRekev Sholidbo, that metal doesn't rot, so the second Beis HaMikdash will be lasting, and there will not be any rotting, and the Jewish people will still have prophecy, will have Nevi. Im Delasi, if it be a Shvach Aliyah, which it was, 43,000 people came back, and billions of Jews remained behind. Like now, hardly anybody came on Aliyah. Now it's picking up a little bit. So if the Aliyah after the Golas Bavel will be very shvach, Notzval Alu Achoris, then the second Beis HaMikdash will be like a wooden hut, like a wooden bungalow. Shaharekim Sholibo. The second Beis HaMikdash will rot away, and there will be rotting. There will be rekiv in the Jewish people. You won't have any prophets. So the Gemara says we didn't have any more prophets after the Golas Bavel. The only three Gimel Nevi'im Olamim Moimi Bavel, the three prophets, Chag Yizchar Malachi, who were needed in order to authorize the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So you see from the Gemara also like that. That's the first shuv in the Binyan Sion. Binyan Sion is the collection of shuvahs of Rabbi Yankov Etlerger. He's the one who gave smicha to Rabbi Hirsch. He was a rabbi in Germany, the beginning of the Reform Movement. So he sent the shuvah of Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, was a big Talmud Chacham, he's a Talmud of Rabbi Kiveger, and he had this dream that they should build the Beis HaMikdash. We should go build the Beis HaMikdash now. And he thought that he solved all the problems. So he writes, the only problem he wasn't aware of that he couldn't solve is there's a mosque there, and the Arabs won't let you build. He never visited there, so didn't know there's a mosque, there's nothing to discuss. So he wrote this whole book, Drishas Tzion. It was a letter to Rothschild. The Rothschild should put up the money, and they should build the Beis HaMikdash, and whoever is instrumental in building the Beis HaMikdash may turn out to be the Melech HaMashiach. So he doesn't say, build the Beis HaMikdash, hang up a plaque. He said, you may turn out to be the Melech HaMashiach. That was what he wrote in the book. So he thought that he solved all the problems. So So Rav Tzvi Eshkalish had published this work. We should try to build a Beis HaMikdash today. So the Rabbanim responded, that's the first tshuv in the Binyan Tzion. That's why it's called Binyan Tzion, that rebuilding Beis HaMikdash. First two tshuvas to Rav Tzvi Eshkalish. He says, you can't build a Beis HaMikdash without authorization of a Navi. And there was no Navi. What are you going to give? Honorary honoris causa. You're going to give an honorary degree of Nevuah. You have to have a real bona fide Navi. We don't have any Navi today. So we have to wait till we'll have a Navi to authorize the building in the Beis HaMikdash. We're stuck. What's going to be when the Navi will come? Will he tell us to build it ourselves, or will it fly down from heaven? We're not so sure. So Rashi and Tosfos quote such a medrash that it'll fly down from heaven, and the Rambam doesn't sound like he holds like that. The former chief rabbi has a nice essay, Rabbi Amar, very sweet fellow. He has very beautiful tshuvas, very lovely style of Hebrew, very lumdish tshuvas. He has a whole essay where he writes, where the building of the Beis HaMikdash is a mitzvah, or no, the mitzvah is hakrovas hakrabonis. So the Rambam holds that building of the Beis HaMikdash is counted as a mitzvah. So God will not cause the Beis HaMikdash to fly down from heaven. He's going to steal a mitzvah from us. He'll encourage us, we should build the Beis HaMikdash. But those Rishonim who quote this Medrash, Rashi and Tosfos quote the Medrash, Mikdash Hashem karen yodecha dat lasi lovai, the Beis HaShlisha will fly down from heaven. They obviously disagree with the Rambam. The whole building Beis HaMikdash is not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is hakrovas hakrabonis. So God won't be cheating us of fulfilling a mitzvah if he causes it to fly down and help us. We'll be able to be makriv the kabbanas faster. He thinks that's what the issue involved is, whether it's going to fly down from heaven. But without a Navi, we can't build on our own. Every Gemara is practical, not... Every Gemara is practical, halacha l'maaseh. Every shaila that comes up has a source in the Gemara. You know, it's interesting. After the Mechemet Yom HaKippurim, the year after Mechemet Yom HaKippurim, Rabbi Schlesinger, Rabbi Meir Schlesinger, who founded the Yeshivat Shalavim, invited all the boys that were in the army the year before to come Chalamoid Sukkis, the year following Mechemet Yom HaKippurim. They should come to Shalavim HaChalamoid, and they spent the whole day. He said everyone should write down all the shadas that came up in the middle of the war. That shaila is five people on one side of the river, five people on the other side of the river. Are they mitztarif to a minyan? How close you have to be? Or they were blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. There was a build-up before. They were blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah in a cave, out of the cave. Who was Yotze? Was Yotze? All the shadas. They should write down all the shadas. Not going to work on them. So he said 85% of the shadas were explicit in the Mishnah Berurah. But when we read Mishnah Berurah, we skip a lot. This is never going to come up in 1,000 years. So we skip that line. You run over it briefly. But when they had the shadas and they looked it up, 85% of all the shadas are there b'verish. And not only that, every shadah that comes up is somewhere in the Gemara. It may not always be in the Mishnah Berurah. Everything is in the Gemara. The Gemara has a lot of strange dinim. Every single case is covered. 3 years ago, we had a professor from MIT visited in Yeshiva, I forgot his name. He's Jewish. He's the one who invented the Kindle. That you read books. So he he's a Baal Tshuva, and he's a Baal Tshuva, and he enjoys learning Daf Yomi. He came to the Yeshiva, the Daf Yomi was on Chulin. The day he came, he said that yesterday, the Daf Yomi, I wasn't learning Daf Yomi. I work for a living. He has a lot of time on his hands. He has time to learn Daf Yomi. He goes to the Kollel in Boston, so he has someone to learn with him Daf Yomi. He only agreed to come to YU if they would arrange for someone to learn with him the Daf Yomi that day. He can't miss a day. So he said, yesterday's Daf Yomi had a funny Mishnah, a strange Mishnah, about a person who grows from the ground. A vegetable that's also an animal at the same time. So he said, it doesn't exist yet. He's working on it to try to make it. He now does work in genetic engineering. He takes genes from carrots and puts them into the mice, genes from the mice and puts them into the potatoes. They have all kinds of combinations. And he said, he went to Rabbi Yashiv years ago to ask if there's an Isaac Lion to take the genes from the mouse and put them in the potatoes. Anyway, so he said his first love was... He sounded like he went to law school. Then he said after he was bored with that, then he went to physics and he invented the Kindle and another 101, Patents. He had a lot of things. Kindle is one of them. That's the famous one. And now he's doing genetic engineering and biology. So he said when his first love in law, when he went to law, he realized that you can draw up a contract, a business contract, in such a way that it will not be covered by the legal system of the United States of America, by the state laws. You can draw up a contract that's not going well. Then when he started studying Gemara, he came to the realization there's no case that's not covered with it. The Gemara has every single case covered. Those who study Mishnayos Yevamos, the Mishnah has every single case possible. There were five brothers and five sisters, and he's married to him, and he died first, she died first. Every single possibility is covered. And even if it's not covered in the Mishnah, it's covered in the Gemara. He came to the realization every single din is covered. There's no case that's not covered by the din in the Gemara. There's a Tosis in the beginning of Ksubis. Someday you'll learn the beginning of Ksubis, okay? Tosis discusses what is Goel of a Deifik. So the Machlek is Rashi and Tosis. So Rashi says the Goel of a Deifik are the lid of the coffin and the walls on the side of the coffin. The Tosis said that's ridiculous. The Gemara in Erevin, the Aptezvav, has a discussion in the Tanoim. What if you make a Goel of Deifik from a live animal? Which Meshugan is going to use a live animal for the lid of the coffin? Going to bury, they're going to throw dirt? Going to bury the animal alive? That's ridiculous. The Torah says it can't be that Goel of Deifik needs the lid of the coffin and the walls on the side. It means the matzeva. So sometimes a person buries a mace and they don't have a matzeva, so they'll bang a peg into the ground, they'll tie a cow, they'll tie a horse to the peg, and tomorrow they'll come and put the matzeva. So temporarily they use a live animal as a matzeva. Which Meshugana is going to use a live animal on the lid of the coffin? Then Tosfos says we haven't rejected Rashi completely because the style of the Talmud is to discuss cases even if it's never going to kind of come up in a million years. The Gemara discusses cases in abstract in order to be mevar what the din is. As the Gemara discusses in the end of Chorus, what's the din if a cow is pregnant and they take the fetus and they put it into a different cow? It's never going to come up in a million years. But the Gemara told, they do it Maisim Mechol Yom today. They take the fetus from one woman, and the fetus from one cow, they put it into another cow. So Tosfos writes, the style of the Talmud Bavli is to discuss far-fetched cases, even though it's never going to come up in a million years, in order to memorize what the din is. Every single case is covered by the Gemara. There's a Shach in Chosh Mishpat. The Shach is commenting and said in Shulchan Aruch that Dina the Machus, Dina, we're obligated to follow the law of the land, only if one of the people involved in the case is a non-Jew. That's it. The two Jews, Reuven and Shimon, have a din Torah. So you don't follow din in the Machus. You follow din at Torah. We follow Chosh and Mishpat. Do you ever follow din in Machus when all the parties involved are Jewish? So the Shach says, yeah, once in a while there are exceptions to the rule, but we do follow din in Machus. So he gives one case. If the Halach has nothing to say on the case, then we do follow din in Machus. So Chazon Ish says, it doesn't exist. Where do you have a case in Bidi Momus that Taloch has nothing to say? Either it says you're chayv or you're putter. There is no case that has nothing to say. You may not find the Gemara, so work a little harder and you find what the din is. The Halach always has something to say. There's no case in the world. So you really have to learn all the Gemaras. There should be a difut, there should be a preference. First learn brachas, first learn Shabbos. You have to know how to say Kriyashma, you have to know how to daven, you have to know how to like tefillin. First you have to learn the dinim that are relevant to Halach Lamaisa. But then to say, well, why is there any value in learning the rest of Torah if it's not relevant? Everything in the Torah is interconnected. We have halachas like that. You learn that Mamatzina Midin Echad Lachaver. Everything is interconnected, and every single Gemara is relevant. I remember when I was learning with my Chavrusa, we were learning a certain Gemara in the end of Yevamos, and we wanted to see if we. And then we studied the Rav Chaim Volozhin has a tshuva, and we studied the Shulchan Aruch and the Pesachei Tshuva, Rav Chaim Volozhin tshuva. We wanted to test ourselves to see if we really understood it well. So we took out an Igros Moshe, and we read the Shaila that Rav Moshe Feinstein has, and we decided what the din should be, and then we looked in the tshuva. So he starts off the tshuva. There's a Gemara M'choris we never heard of, Gemara M'choris, and that sheds light on this din. We never heard of that Gemara. Everything in the Gemara is interconnected. Kol HaTorah Kula Inyan Echad. So that first you have to study those Gemaras that are relevant. First you have to learn Hilchas Tefillah, and Hilchas Kriyashma, and Hilchas Shabbos, and Hilchas Kashrus, and Hilchas Taras HaMishpacha. But then there is value in learning Kol HaTorah Kula. There's a mitzvah to learn Kol HaTorah Kula, because everything is interconnected.
What
The pasuk in Chumash says, "Valisha beninus t'masa masikrufu legalas erva." So not only is it prohibited to sleep with an isha nida, a woman that didn't go to mikveh, even your own wife, but it's prohibited even masikrufu legalas erva, even to dance with her, to kiss her, to hug her is also prohibited. The Rambam considers this a biblical prohibition. He counts it as one of the 613 mitzvahs. The Ramban disagrees, and he thinks that it's only midirabbanan, and the drasha and the pasuk is only an asmach. You look in the Shulchan Aruch paskens like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch paskens that the kira basar, to kiss a woman who's anida, you can kiss your mother, even if she's anida, because it's not derechiba. You don't get erotic pleasure from kissing your mother when she's anida. But to kiss anida, where there is erotic pleasure, so that's the prohibition, that's called kira basar derechiba, if it's derechiba. So that's the question, what about shaking hands? Is shaking hands, is that considered derechiba or not? Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in several of his tshuvas that there's room to be mesupik. But the Talmidim Rav Moshe said that orally he said that he thinks it is permissible. And the tshuvas, he didn't want to write everything. He was enough makel on so many other dinners, he didn't want to write another kula. But Baal Peh, he said that shaking hands in America is so common, it doesn't mean anything. Unless the girl is very good looking, and she's wearing a bikini, So she's a young girl, so then even shaking hands will be derechiba. You got to be careful. A person has to be honest with himself whether it's derechiba or not. You're going to say, I'm going to kiss and hug and dance with a woman, and there's no chiba. What do you mean there's no chiba? You should go see a doctor. You're sick. But there's no derechiba. That's why they tell the story that one of the boys in Kfar Hasidim lived in Tel Aviv, so he wanted to go home for Shabbos. So, what's his name? Who was in Kfar Hasidim? Rabbi Yelopian. So Rabbi Yelopian said, you live in Tel Aviv, it was summertime, and everybody was half undressed there in Tel Aviv. So he said, you're not afraid of a Yetzirah, the women walk around? He said, no, he's not afraid. You sure? Nothing wrong? He said, no. So Rabbi Yelopian screamed and said, call a doctor, the kid is sick. You have to be honest with yourself. If it's a good-looking girl, there is going to be derechiba. So with, let's say, a sister. So strictly speaking, you can kiss your sister. The Rambam says, it's stupid, it's silly, it's derech hatipshin, why should you kiss your sister? But let's say the sister doesn't appreciate that it's silly. So you should kiss your sister, that she shouldn't think that you're an idiot, you shouldn't think you're a moron, she shouldn't feel rejected, she shouldn't feel bad. Let's say an aunt. My mother's family, there are four sisters. And my mother passed away, and three sisters passed away. The fourth sister is the youngest. She's still alive. I have one aunt. So one of my aunts and uncles have one aunt that's still alive with her husband. So she's a little older than me, but she's not 10 years older than me. She's good looking, too. She's a nice aunt. She's married. So that, I don't think I should kiss my aunt. She's almost my age. My mother was 15 years older than her. So that's close to my age. If it's a great aunt, if it's my grandmother's sister or something like that, that's not derechiba. So she's gonna come hug me and kiss me. Strictly speaking, it's mutter. It's derech hatipshin, but if she doesn't appreciate this Rambam, who says it's derech hatipshin, she got no choice, it's mutter. One of the boys in the yeshiva once asked me, he was a Baal Tshuva, he was a Yosem, his father passed away, he was a wealthy guy. Now he lives in Meir Sharm, he has 15 children, and each child has 15 children. And he writes, Meir Sharm, they can real into a kaitanik. So when he learned in the yeshiva, he was a Baal Tshuva. So he was learning in JSS. That's the division for the Baal Tshuva. So he was a rabbi, I didn't know, he was in Rabbi Willich's. So he comes and he asks me, what's the din? His mother's aunt is coming to visit, his great aunt, and she comes, she gives him a hug. He wants to know, is he allowed to hug her? So I said, come on, there's no derechiba, it's mutter. So he says, you rabbis, you're all the same. He asked his rebbe, it was Rabbi Willig. Rabbi Willig said, it's mutter, and I say the same thing. He's going to ask Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Good, ask. So that time you can call up Rabbi Moshe on the telephone. But Rabbi Moshe didn't speak English, he didn't speak Yiddish. He didn't speak Hebrew either, this Baal Tshuva. Now he lives in Meir Shorim, now he knows Yiddish. I don't know if he knows Hebrew, but he knows Yiddish, he lives in Meir Shorim. So he calls up Rabbi Moshe on the phone, comes to me 2 days later. He says, he explained it to Rabbi Moshe what the Shaila was, and Rabbi Moshe gave him an answer. He doesn't know what Rabbi Moshe said. What did he say? He screamed in Yiddish and he said, Zaynish ken batlin. So I said, I mean, don't act like an idiot. I said, Rabbi Moshe is also why you rabbi. If it's kira basar, not derechiba, so strictly speaking, it's mutter. It's the Rambam says, derech hatipshin. But if the great aunt or your sister won't appreciate this Rambam, that is their hatipshin, so you hug them and you kiss them and shine. But if it's a girl approximately your age, and she's not so bad looking, she's not so ugly, and there's a chashash that it may be derechibo, so then it's either a biblical prohibition or a rabbinical, and the Shulchan Aruch Pasuk is like the Rambam, then it's a biblical prohibition. It's a serious prohibition. Serious prohibition, because we know that the people who violate these dinim ultimately come to sin, and they do this serious aver itself. I remember we used to have a professor in Yeshiva College. He passed away already a long time ago. He was known to be a womanizer. So he was teaching English literature. His father was a big Talmid Chacham, and he was a good for nothing. So we were reading poems. You know, the British poets, the English poets, many of them were galochim. How do you say? Many were priests. So they write poems about Yoshka, and they write poems about their girlfriend with the same seriousness. So one of the poems, one of the writers is writing about how beautiful his girlfriend's hair is. So the teacher blurts out in the middle of class, the rabbis in the Talmud hit it on the nail. They said, Seir Bisha Ervo, the hair of a girl is attractive. And if a person doesn't want to sin, he shouldn't look at a girl's hair. So some of the students, this was an advanced course in English literature. I was the only one who wasn't an English major. All the others were not so religious, and they were English majors. So they were so stunned. He's saying that. He said, yeah, if a person doesn't want to sin, he should be careful not to look at the girl's hair, because Seir Bisha Ervo. The same thing over here. Kira Basa, whether it's the Raisa, the Rabbanon, the Shulchan Aruch Pasuk, the Raisa, even if it's only the Rabbanon, this is a real harchoka that will prevent us from violating Yisrael. Yichud is a real din. There were scandals in America last year. What was the guy's name? Petraeus. Big people in the army. They had to resign from they lost their positions because they had an affair with an Eishes Ish, with other people. They found emails, and it's scandalous because they violated Yichud. You violate, they weren't Jewish. But if they would have an ounce of brains, they would have been careful not to do yichud, because one thing leads to the other. It's obvious like that.
Is there a mitzvah to wear tefillin?
If a person wears a four-cornered garment, there's a mitzvah in the Chumash to wear tzitzis. If you have a four-cornered garment, you should have two parts to the tzitzis, tchelis and lavan. For many years, we haven't had tchelis available. So in the end of the 1800s, there was a Chassidish Rebbe, the Radzina Rebbe. He thought that he discovered Tchelus. So Rabbi Herzog published his doctoral dissertation before he became chief rabbi when he lived in Ireland. So he published a whole essay. His dissertation was that the Radzina Rebbe made a mistake, that the Goyish chemist, he put an advertisement in an Italian newspaper that he went to Italy. This Rebbe lived in Poland. He went to Italy. There was a big aquarium. He wanted to study all the different sea animals to determine which one is the chalazim. And he decided that it's a certain certain fish. So then he took the dye from that fish, and he kept on dyeing wool, and he kept on washing out. And the Gemara says that it's to identify that it's really tchelus, is you know it's tchelis if it doesn't wash out, if it's indelible. If it washes out, it's not tchelis, it's a fake. So he kept on losing the dye. So he put an advertisement in the newspaper, he's willing to pay money, he needs a chemist to help out. So a guy came and he volunteered, for money, why not? So he said, he explained what the issue was, I want this color in the dye, I want that it shouldn't wash out. So the guy said, no problem, and he gave him a chemical. So he thought that the chemical accomplished that the dye should be indelible. Then Rabbi Herzog ascertained the chemical was the dye. The dye that he had from the fish washed out. And the Goyish chemist, the Italian Goyish chemist, gave him Prussian blue. That made the dye. So the dye in the Radzina Tchelis doesn't come from the fish at all. It has nothing to do with the fish. So Rabbi Herzog said that that's a big mistake. And then Rabbi Herzog wrote what he thinks it is. He thinks that chaloza means a snail. It doesn't mean a big fish. Chalazin is not a fish at all. The word chalazin in Talmudic literature means a snail, and they came up with this snail that they have now. So they may be right, they may be wrong. The Pashtus, they probably are right. It's at least 50-50 suffix that they're right or wrong. The Pashtus, it should be suffix the Raisa Luchumra. If you're wearing a four-cornered garment, you should put on tzitzis. If you don't wear a four-cornered garment, not mechuyev to. But the Baalei HaTosfos say we go out of our way to wear a four-cornered garment in order to enable ourselves to observe another additional mitzvah. So once you put on the four-cornered garment, if Tchelis is not available, so you don't have. But if it is available, so why should you be mevatel a mitzvah? Wouldn't it be better not to wear the four-cornered garment, not to wear the talis at all, rather than to wear it and not to put Tchelis? You wear a four-cornered garment, you're obligated to put love in a Tchelis. You don't fulfill the mitzvah. So better not to get involved in the first place. So don't wear a talis. Who tells you you have to wear a talis? So the Pashto says you should wear Tchelis. So some had a suggestion years ago, 100 years ago, some had a suggestion that Safik Deraisa Luchum is only after you do it, now you know that you fulfilled the mitzvah for sure. But if you'll go ahead and wear the Tchelis and you're still not sure, it's a Safik even after putting on the Tchelis, whether you've accomplished anything or not, so that's not covered with the din of Safik Deraisa Luchum. So Ramirach Mzemba quotes this, and he shows from the Shulchan Aruch, we don't accept that opinion. He says there was such an opinion. The Baal HaTanya writes like that in Shulchan Aruch. He says the big Shulchan Aruch says not so. That Safik Darais HaLuchom even applies, even after you'll do it, you'll still not be sure whether you've accomplished everything. And over here, it's really, it's more than a 50-50 Safik. The Pashtus, they say, is that it seems that it is correct. So one of the prominent Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Asher Weiss, he's a big Talmid Chacham. So they asked Rabbi Asher Weiss, he wrote a tshuva, as he calls it. He wrote a tshuva that he was brought up in America. He talks English like a regular American. But Yiddish, he talks Hebrew and Yiddish, he says, the way his father says, his father's still alive. So he wrote a tshuva that we don't believe in archaeology and there's no suffix at all. People can't believe it. That's what he said. This is the man who knows the whole encyclopedia by heart. When he was a little child, he lived in Williamsburg. He was brought up in Williamsburg. And the teacher who taught secular studies told his parents that the kid is a genius. Get him an encyclopedia. So he read the encyclopedia from cover to cover. He knows everything by heart. This is the genius who read the whole encyclopedia. He says, we don't believe in archaeology. What are you talking about? He never says like that. Why do no one understands it. This is the latest tshuva that came out. We don't believe in archaeology, and therefore there's not even a suffix, nothing to discuss. Very Peladic. So the Soloveitchik family, both in Eretz Yisrael and in America, they have a tradition from the Beis HaLevi. They have a tradition that the Beis HaLevi said that in order to identify what a chalazin is, in order to know that the sea animal, you have to have a masora. And if you don't have a masora, even if you're right, you're not right. So we'll never know to identify what is the chalazin until Eliyahu Navi will come and he had a masora, ish mipiish. So that's a very strange suggestion. And Rabbi Yashub was this. He thought that that version of what the Beis HaLevi said didn't make any sense. The Radzina Rebbe has a letter from a friend of the Beis HaLevi who wrote a whole different explanation of what the Beis HaLevi... He didn't say that. So Rabbi Yashub said, we can reconstruct the Masorah with archaeology. Rabbi Yashub said, not like a bush of ice. Of course, why can't you reconstruct the Masorah based on archaeology? He said he didn't think that version of what the Beis HaLevi said was right. So the Pashto says they think they found Tchelis. So what's so bad about it? So Safik Deraisa Luchum. So use the Tchelis. What's going to come? The world is not going to come to an end. It cost $100. Okay. So the worst is you lost $100. But there's a good likelihood that you will be fulfilling the mitzvah. It's a pasuk in the Torah. We say it every day. Kriyashma. Still Tchelis. You have to put Tchelis in the tzitzis. What's the whole... Basically, the whole reservation is that it was discovered by Mizrahi people, by modern Orthodox people, by students of Rabbi Tendler. Rabbi Tendler used to give a course in Yeshiva College about the recent discoveries in science. So he encouraged the students to go scuba diving to find this snail. So because it came from Yeshiva University, so that's why the world does not accept it. Is that a valid reason? If Maimon Hasina would have been in Yeshiva University, so the Jews wouldn't listen. Come on. You have to be honest. The whole thing is a bilbo. You have to Kabbalah Samus Mimish Amorai. If it came from Rabbi Tendler's students, so be it. So if it's right, it's right. What's this? On pizza. My children always used to say hamotzi on pizza. It says in Shulchan Aruch that pas haba bekisnin is mezainis. Pas haba bekisnin is like cherry pie. You have dough on top, dough on bottom, you have cake, and then you have a filling in the middle. So So Moshe Feinstein says that all of our cakes have so much sugar in them that they're all considered possible because it's like a pocket. It has so much sugar, everything. In Europe, not all the cakes had so much sugar, so some of them were Safek HaMoitzi. He says, by us, it's all Vadai Mizonis. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, this is only if it has a filling, like a cherry pie, a blueberry pie, something like that. What if you have a filling, you have dough on top, dough on the bottom, you have cheese in the middle. So you bake the cheese sandwich. You have dough on top, dough on the bottom, then you have flesh in the middle. So you bake the salami sandwich, you bake the fleshy sandwich. That's how people eat a meal. If you have cherries in the middle, so that's for a snack. People don't eat cherry pie in order to fill themselves up. You eat it as a dessert. But if you bake dough on top, dough on the bottom, and cheese in the middle, so you bake the cheese sandwich. Milachatchila baked it with the cheese. So Shulchan Aruch says that the Shulchan Aruch calls it pasta. Pasta is hamoitzi. So the pashta says that pizza should be hamoitzi. My children always said hamoitzi. I thought for sure, they say the psak from Moshe Feinstein, that if you have one slice of pizza, it's mezonos. You have two slices of pizza, it's hamoitzi. So I thought for sure Moshe probably didn't know what pizza was. Then they told me that Moshe asked 1,001 questions before he gave the psak. He knew very well what pizza was. I don't understand it. I don't understand how he can say it like that. I thought pizza is about the hamoitzi. Even Rabbi Belsky, who's so cough after Moshe Feinstein, he asked all the shadows that Moshe Feinstein years ago, he also said that pizza should be hamoitzi. He doesn't understand it either.
In Eretz Yisrael, a lot of the pizza places, Dafka, make it with apple juice or something, the dough, they make the batzek with apple.
That's what they call mezonos rolls, yes. Mezonos rolls is also not right. In New York, they have the shtick. They have a wedding, and then they say, in the women's section, all the rolls are mezonos rolls. So you go, you travel by plane, so they give you the food. So it says, all the rolls are mezonos, you don't have to wash. It's not really right. If you use made Paris instead of water, and it tastes like cake, so then it's mezonos. If it tastes like bread, or even if it doesn't taste 100% like bread, but you eat it with a regular meal. You eat it as part of a meal. That's a person eats cake as part of a whole meal, and the cake is eaten not as a dessert at the end after he's full, ready to platz. He eats the cake to fill him up. So the Bongan Abram says the cake becomes hamoitzi. That itself is called the kviya suda. So this whole idea of mezonos rolls is really not right. For quite a few years, the OU refused to give a hashgacha on the airline meals, because they had a co-hashgacha with the Nirbater, I think, with the Chassidish Rebbe, and he had him write down that all the rolls are mezonos rolls. And the Rabbanim in the OU, I'm in the OU in Hashgacha, Rabbanim in the OU, they all felt that it wasn't right, so they refused to give the OU. So then they took it off. Now that doesn't have the OU. I just came to Eretz Yisrael this week. It says mezonos rolls, and it doesn't have the OU, it just has the Nirbater's Hashgacha. Because the OU refused to give Hashgacha, to tell people that you don't have to say Hamoitzi. It's not true. It is Hamoitzi. When you go in Europe also, they have the British Hashgacha also says the mezonos rolls. And the other ones, the other Hashgachas, they all say mezonos rolls. It's not really right. Al Pi Din, it's not right. They all should all be Hamoitzi. It's not mezonos rolls. It tastes like bread, and you eat it like bread. So that's called pasaba b'kisn yikaveh suda on it. And it isn't even possible because it tastes like bread. So it's regular hamoitzi. That's not right.
How do you justify call numbers running all day and not earning money as 1%?
How do you do what?
How do you justify call numbers running all day and not earning money as 1%?
We have young men who get married who go to law school or medical school. So a couple of years, the wife is supporting the husband, or the parents or the in-laws are supporting them till they get a job. So if a guy learns in a kollel for a few years to prepare himself to go into the rabbinate, to go into chinuch, so that's the same as going to law school, medical school. Even though the husband gets married and he writes in the ksub, I'm going to support you, it's self-understood that for a couple of years till he prepares himself, that's okay. Here in Eretz Yisrael, they have people learning and cuddling with their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. Everybody's learning the code for generation after generation. They never go out. So that's not right. What right do they have to ask me? Why should I support him? I'd like to retire also. Why not support me? I'd also like not to work for a living. This is a sickness that they started here. In Europe, they never had such a thing. Chaim Oiz had a kollel, they had 10 people. They all went into Rabbanus. Chavetz Chaim had a kollel, and Slabotka had a kollel. They all went into Rabbanus Achinot. They were prominent rabbis. They're not kollel where people sat and they learned forever and they were supported by the Jewish community. They have no right to demand of us we should support them. Yeshiva University has a kollel. We have a few kollelim, different kollelim. For a tachlis, they go to learn for a couple of years and go to chinuch, rabbanis or something, and the yeshiva feels, the balabatim of the yeshiva feel this is an investment into the future. Wanted people to learn in the kollel for a couple of years, within reason, and then even not to go into the chinuch rabbanis, to be learned balabatim, we want that too. But to sit and learn for 50 years in a kollel, that's absolutely unreasonable. The husband is able to support his wife. If the wife agrees to the setup, good, but Klal Yisrael doesn't have to agree to the setup. We're not mechuyev to support them. It's very unfair. The Rambam writes, famous, Arichas, that you're not allowed to make Torah, kardam lachbabo. So the Rambam has in the Pirush HaMishnayos on Pirkei Avos, he writes, you're not allowed to come to a community and say, here I am, I'm a big Talmid Chacham, I want to sit and learn, I want you to support me. You have no right to demand of the community. If the community feels that you're needed for the future, so they'll hire you as a rabbi. But to tax the community and say, here I am, I want to sit in the kollel and you should support me for 50 years. That's unreasonable on your part. That's not right. Europe, they never had it. In Europe, everybody after bar mitzvah went to work. They learned in school till bar mitzvah. After bar mitzvah went to work. And they had one child from every community would go to learn in the big yeshiva. So the Miri Yeshiva at its peak had, let's say, almost 400 students from 400 different cities. And if it was a big city, they had two students from that city. And there have to be three students want to go, so the third student will have to go to a different yeshiva. It wouldn't take someone. So now you have every corner of Borough Park and Flatbush, there's another yeshiva. Every child goes to the yeshiva till after they get married. They never had this in Europe. Everybody went to work. And those who went to the yeshivas, Echem Meir, Shnaim and Mishpacha, one or two, from the whole village and went to yeshiva, they later on became Rabbanim. It's not so many people sitting on the kollel forever and the whole Jewish community supports them. It's a new phenomenon that we never had. It's not right. Are there any legitimate reasons to make Aliyah? Yeah, it's a mitzvah in the Torah. Lech lochame yartzachame v'lardecha. The Baruch Shalom tells us we should all move to Eretz Yisrael. I mean, are there any legitimate reasons not to make Aliyah? To make Aliyah, it's a mitzvah? Yeah, we assume it's a mitzvah. We all have a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Whoever can make a reasonable parnasa. If you can make a parnasa in Chutz Lord and move to Eretz Yisrael and live off of charity, then that's not a mitzvah. That's not a mitzvah. Let's say, if in Eretz Yisrael there's a famine, There's no food to eat. Chutz Lord's this food. So then the Gemara says, you're allowed to leave. If living in Eretz Yisrael will be too difficult, it'll be unreasonable, then there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. But if a person can make a reasonable parnas in Eretz Yisrael, he's obligated to move to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to say for years, whoever is in Rabbanus, whoever is in Chinuch, is not allowed to leave Chutz Lord's to go on Aliyah, because all the Rabbanim are fighting assimilation and intermarriage by giving chinuch and so on, and you're not allowed, the general is not allowed to leave front until he succeeded in winning the whole battle. We're in the middle of a war against assimilation, against reform, against conservative. You're not allowed to leave. When the son-in-law, Rabbanim Lichtenstein, moved to Herzl, was very upset. He used to say this for years. Rabbanim and Mechanchim are not allowed to leave. There is a tshuva in the Maharam Shik. Maram Shik was a student of the Chasam Sefer, so the Maram Shik had a Talmud. They lived in Hungary and they were fighting reform. Maram Shik had a Talmud who was in the rabbinate in Hungary fighting reform. They were all fighting reform. And he did not enjoy it. He was successful, but he did not enjoy it. So he was offered a position in Eretz Yisrael of Rabbanus in the late 1800s, very unusual. He should move to Eretz Yisrael and they'll give him a salary. He should sit and learn and pass Mishailas and give Shiurim. So he seized the opportunity. He packed up his things ready to leave. So he sent a letter to his Rebbe, the Maram Shik, should give him a blessing on the move. So he sends him back a letter, I can't give you a blessing, it's Keneged Adin, you have no right to leave. So he writes, when you were studying in the yeshiva, in my yeshiva, we had no right to draft you in the army to go into the rabbinate. Many of your classmates went into business, but you volunteered to go into the rabbinate, and you were successful, and you were successful in fighting reform. So he says, Adinus ha'isig b'mitzvah, patam an ha'mitzvah. He not, and he quotes the Ritva at the end of the second parak in Sukkah, Oisik b'mitzvah, since you're putter for second mitzvah, you're not allowed to be mafsik the first mitzvah to do the second mitzvah. So he says that he writes the same lashon that Rabbi Soloveitchik said. Rabbi Soloveitchik didn't see it in the Maharamshik. The same lashon that he has is the general is not allowed to leave the front until he sees that everything has been, the job is done. He said, you have no right to leave the Rabbanus where you're fighting reform and to move to Eretz Yisrael and to do the mitzvah of Aliyah. You have to stick it out here and continue to fight. Then he quotes a story about the Chasam Sofer, that the only source is from that tshuva. The Chasam Sofer was born in Frankfurt. He was brought up in Frankfurt. He always, and then he had a Rabbanus in Presburg. So he always wanted to move. He was a Yekke. He wasn't an Ungarish. He always wanted to move back to Frankfurt. So at one time later in his career, he was offered the Rabbanus in Frankfurt. So he was planning to move back to Germany. He wanted to move back. So some of the Balabatim heard about it, that he wants to leave. So they came to him, a whole representation came to him, and they were crying, and they were pleading with him, Rebbe, who's going to fight reform? We can lose the battle if you're going to leave. So he said he didn't realize that. So he said he's not going to move. He's going to stay. So that's what the Maram Shik writes. You're not allowed to leave. You're fighting reform. You're not allowed to leave. That Maram Shik's letter, that tshuva, that was the letter that Rav Chaim Moses sent to Rav Kook. When Rav Kook was the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, he corresponded with Rav Chaim Moses. Rav Kook died, I think, 1935. Rav Chaim Moses died in 1940 or 1941 or something, a few years later. So Rav Kook corresponded with Rav Chaim Moses. He should move to Eretz Yisrael, and he was going to get an apartment for him and a salary, and he was going to have a title. Rav Kook was going to be the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Chaim Moses was going to be Reish Kol B'nei HaGoyim. That was going to be his title. And he was holding by coming. And then the last minute, Rav Chaim Moshe backed out and he sent him a letter. He said, I can't come because of the Maram Shik's tshuva. He says, the Rabbanim in Vilna insist that I'm still needed, so I'm not allowed to leave. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said, that those who are Oisik and Rabbanis and Chinuch and Emeri, they can't leave the Jewish community. Some people talk it into themselves that they're indispensable, that without them the whole Jewish community will collapse. I live in Washington Heights, so they have a lot of Yekkes there. So they say there's a German expression that the cemetery is full of all of those indispensable people. That during their lifetime, they thought the world can't continue without me. And they died and they're buried, and the world is still running the way it always went. So a lot of rabbis and chutzlars are not really needed. They're not really saving the world. So they can go takan aliyah. But some mechanchem and some rabbanim really are fighting reform, are fighting assimilation. So those people, like Rav Chaim Moshe, those people have to stay in mannership, have to stay in the Jewish community in Chutz Lars needs leadership too. Need to wear the tzitzis under your trousers. Yeah. In the Mishnah Berurah, it sounds like you always have to have the strings exposed, even if you have the garment covered. That's how the Magen Avraham quotes the Arizal. The garment should be covered, and the tzitzis should be exposed. That's a simple reading of the Mishnah Berurah. So Rav Gusman was a big Talmid Chacham. As a young man, he's known as a very learned fellow. He married the granddaughter of Rabbi Saul Salanter, who was an orphan. Her father passed away. Her father was on the Bezna of Rav Chaim Moshe in Vilna. And they made up, whoever's going to marry the girl, if it'll be a Talmid Chacham, should take the father's spot. So he married the granddaughter of Rabbi Saul Salanter, and he was on the Bezna of Rav Chaim Moshe at the age of 18, I think. He was very young. He was very learned. So on one occasion, the Chafetz Chaim came to Vilna to discuss some political issue with Rav Chaim Moshe. And Rabbi Gusman said he was stunned. He didn't see, he had his tzitzis under his trousers. He didn't have the tzitzis exposed. So he got up enough nerve to ask him, how come you don't follow what you wrote, what it's in the Mishnah Berurah? So they printed this. He said, I beg your pardon, that's not what it says in the Mishnah Berurah. And he said that it says something. He says he never said, well, the Mishnah Berurah wasn't really written by the Chafetz Chaim. He had a whole group of people who did the writing. The son of the Chafetz Chaim writes in the biography, this part of the Mishnah Berurah is written by his uncle, this is written by his cousin, this is written by his brother, He writes a different part. That's why every so often there's a contradiction in Mishnah Berurah between one siman and the other. Different parts were written by different people. But still, he was the general editor. The Chofetz Chaim was overseeing the whole project. So he said, that's not what the intention was. He said, if you're wearing Arba Kamfet, you shouldn't hide the tzitzis to hide the fact that you're Jewish. But he was wearing his tzitzis under his shirt and his trousers. He thought that there's nothing wrong. Achamaya Avadya always used to say, and he has in his writing, God should forgive the Ashkenazim who violate this din according to Kabbalah. He said, according to his version of the Kabbalah, you're not allowed to have your tzitzis exposed. You don't have to have it covered up. So he said, God should forgive the Ashkenazim for following this serious issue. You're really not supposed to have it. Sfardim, who follow Chacham Avad, you don't have the tzitzis. Many of the Rabbanim, after the war, when the refugees came to America, and they rebuilt Torah in America, all the Rabbanim from the Mir Yeshiva and so on, a lot of them didn't have tzitzis. They said in the Yeshiva in Europe, they didn't go with the tzitzis. This is a more recent phenomenon, but everybody goes with the tzitzis.
Last question, Brandon Beer. Remember
how
you talked about
the Psukim in Tanakh say that there will be Karbonis in the third Beis HaMikdash. The Ramban in his commentary on Chumash attacks the Rambam. The Rambam says that the whole idea of bringing Karbonis is only because it was too difficult to wean the Jewish people away from offering sacrifices. They were so involved in Avodah Zarah. So God gave in a little bit and he said, okay, bring the Karbonis to me. Don't bring Lo'iz B'chodiz Ivchem Lasir M'Shehem Zoivchem Apnei HaZor. It sounds from the Chumash like that. It was only a concession because the Jews were so involved in Avodah Zarah. So Ramban says, if so, why Lasid Lava? It says that there will be Karbanis in the third Beis HaMikdash. Why do we need a concession, Lasid Lava? So the Pashtus is that there is a Medrash, the Rambam quotes a Medrash that says like that, and that Pasuk, Veliyiz B'chodiz L'chem Lasir, that offering Karbanis is some kind of a concession. But whatever it is, it's a mitzvah, it's going to apply even Lasid Lava in the third Beis HaMikdash. The Midrashim say that Lasilavai, the people won't sin so much, so there won't be a chatas and an asham. So what karbonis will they bring? Mizma l'soida, they'll bring a karbonis. We'll be thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we won't sin, so there won't be any need for chatas and asham. But other karbonis will be. Sure. It says in the Psukim, there'll be karbonis. Thank you very much. I always have anoa when I visit you.